Don't miss out on the unforgettable experience of this year's Tulip Time Festival. From 9:30am to 4:30pm September 19th to October 2nd, be captivated by the allure of more than 80,000 tulip bulbs and 15,000 annuals in breathtaking arrangements. Stroll through fields of blooming tulips and explore the variety of food and market stalls. Live music will keep you entertained as you bask in the beauty of nature's finest display. Get ready for a series of unforgettable evenings with our Tulips After Dark special events from 6pm to 9pm Friday the 29th of September with classic country Swampy Blues. Swing and Jazz the 30th of September, ending with a soothing note of classical cool on the 1st of October. To find out more of what's on, go to tuliptime.net.au.
Welcome to our weekly podcast, Check In With Council. On this episode, we are chatting with Wingicarabbee Shire Council General Manager Lisa Miss Gamble and Daniel Osborne, District Manager, Southern Highlands Team, New South Wales RFS. They join us to discuss the crucial topic of bushfire preparedness as we brace ourselves for the impending scorching summer season. Lisa and Daniel, welcome.
Thank you, Adam. We're pleased to be here.
Thanks, Adam. It's great to be here with you.
Great to have you in studio. Now, Daniel, with a hot, dry summer forecast, there is a need to prepare for the bushfire season?
Oh, without a doubt. Look, we're already seeing, as we record this podcast, I've got a number of fire trucks responding to grass fires. And in recent weeks, we've had this trend continue and actually starting to get worse. Fires are taking hold, they are burning well, and the Bureau of Meteorology is forecasting not much of a change by the way of the forecast. We're expecting a hot and dry summer ahead of us.
Lisa, emergency preparedness?
Yes, Adam. So Council facilitate the Local Emergency Management Committee, and on that committee we have a number of key agencies, combat agencies, and most importantly, RFS and SES. And as we're talking about today with bushfire prevention and preparation, the relationship between Council and the RFS and our other key agencies is critical.
Yeah, and I would add, Adam, that I would agree with Lisa's sentiments there and comments that the Council is responsible for the LEMC and we are a key partner in that, and we very much value our relationship with our partner agencies. And I can say through a few different engagements that I've had across the state, my dealings with Wingicarabbee Shire Council and Wollondilly Shire Council for that matter to this point has been very good, and we are very close, in close step, I would suggest, in regards to how we're preparing for the upcoming fire season. But also, you know, if a large event does occur, what are we going to do and how are we going to work collaboratively? And we're establishing operational readiness levels. So ahead of a particularly bad day of fire weather, all agencies, not just the RFS and Council, but everyone that's got a part to play will understand ahead of time what the expectation is from me, ultimately as the incident controller, and be able to get their plans in place ahead of time. So hopefully that will be a good thing for us as we move into what we have described as a very hot and dry summer.
Now, preparations are guided by learnings from the bushfire response and recovery review of 2021 requested by the administrator. Could you just sort of walk us through the completion of hazard reduction burns in partnership with firefighting agencies?
So, Adam, out of the Black Summer fires, there are a lot of learnings, and Council has taken those forward with our key agencies such as RFS and our local police. Prevention and preparation, or preparation and prevention, are key for our community. As Daniel said, you know, there's a lot of work happening ahead of the summer. From the Council perspective, we're working with RFS around hazard reduction burns. Our environment team are clearing overgrowth on asset protection zones on Council-owned land and Council-managed land. We're also undertaking ongoing work to protect our fire trails to support the work of the RFS. We've also updated a number of policies designed around public safety focused on protocols. So a lot of the Wingicarabbee Shire is impacted by bushfire zoned areas. So it's important that we have clear protocols that guide the closure of sports grounds or event venues or bushland reserves in the event of heightened bushfire risk. So those have been updated and new protocols put in place to help our community understand what to do as part of our prevention and preparation work. And we're also holding in partnership with our key agencies, RFS, Police, SES and Local Land Services, two information sessions in the North and South Villages around emergency preparedness. And that's been a really important part of our community education program.
I guess key climate risk exposures for the Wingingarra Shire. There's everything from flooding to severe storms, heat wave, and of course bushfires. And the role of an involvement of council are key to combating the prevention, preparedness, response and recovery. Now, could you share with us an update on what council has been doing to prepare our Shire for what is tipped to be a very hot summer?
It's certainly a partnership with RFS, and as Daniel said, the RFS are the lead agency in the event of a bushfire. From council's perspective, we've facilitated these information sessions, and we're here to support the RFS in terms of getting the message out. Anything that they need from council, we're here to support them, and if need be, in terms of actually responding in an event.
And how can community members do their part?
Oh, well, that's a very good question. The first thing that community members need to be doing is, they don't have a bushfire survival plan, establish one, and if they do have one, review it. The Black Summer fires, whilst they're still a vivid memory in a lot of people's minds, were some years ago now. We're talking 3 years since fires impacted this area, and in that time we've had a lot of floods, so quite rightly fire hasn't been the front of mind for a lot of people. But we need people to be revisiting their bushfire survival plans, understanding what they're going to do if a fire was to start, where they're going to go, what they're going to take, when they're going to leave, you know, and thinking about the scenario, not when it's Saturday afternoon and the whole family's at home, but what happens if the fire starts on Tuesday at 2 o'clock, the kids are at school, mum and dad might be at work, what happens in that scenario? So we need people to be thinking about that. And, you know, we say it only really takes 20 minutes to have that conversation around the dinner table with the people that you live with and the people that you love. So have that conversation sooner rather than later and put a plan in place. You know, we've got our 5 simple tips, which revolve around cleaning your gutters, making sure you've got a hose that reaches all the way around your house, keeping your grass mowed, trimming overhead branches, and having your bushfire survival plan. So it's all pretty simple stuff, but we just need people to be turning their minds to that now. Across the Southern Highlands, we've got in excess of 30 events planned. Lots of our brigade stations will be open. There'll be other brigades that'll be out and about doing various events, and there's a lot of information on the RFS website about that and in our social media channels. But it's a really good opportunity to engage with our firefighters, and if you don't understand your level of risk, then have that conversation with them, and they'll be able to give you more direct advice on what you can do in your personal circumstance. But it all revolves around that bushfire survival plan.
And Daniel, there's also the Hazards Near Me app. Would you like to share that?
Absolutely, yeah. So Fires Near Me, as a lot of people would know, and was a trending app during the Black Summer fires, according to Apple, because everyone was using it so much, which is fantastic, has transitioned to Hazards Near Me. That was a key recommendation out of the inquiry into the Lismore floods that occurred some time ago. So Hazards Near Me now involves not just fires, but also floods, storms and tsunami warnings. And we certainly encourage all residents, regardless of whether you think you live in a bushfire prone area or not, to download that app, get familiar with it, and set up some watch zones. So there's some new functionality in it where you can establish a watch zone for an area that you care about or where you've got relatives or friends. And if a fire is reported in that area, or a flood or a tsunami, then you will get push notifications on your phone alerting you to that fact. And also, if then we increase the warning level or the fire moves or anything like that, you'll receive some notifications as well. This coming fire season, for the first time, we'll also be issuing geographically based warnings. So previously we would issue a warning for a fire. This time we're going to trial issuing warnings based on a geographical location. So whilst a fire might be burning in a particular area, we'll be warning those geographical areas around that fire ground, and that may mean differentiating warnings. Not everyone needs the same warning per se. And the other good feature is that you can choose to have fires, floods or tsunami or any mixture of those, so you don't have to get warnings for everything. It's entirely up to the user. But get familiar with it, download it, use it, share it, and start seeing what that can do and what information that can provide you, because that is very good information that we provide through that platform.
Now, as individual members of the community, how can we contribute to fire preparedness efforts, I mean, such as volunteering or participating in local fire prevention programs?
Yeah, well, there's a couple of things there. The first one would be obviously to say that we're always looking for volunteers. All of our firefighters are volunteers and they do amazing work all year round. Like in the last 12 months, just as a matter of fact, our volunteers have attended more than 1,200 incidents in the Southern Highlands. That is a huge number. That's 1,200 incidents. That's more than, you know, 3 or 4 a day. So join the Rural Fire Service is my message. If you've got something to contribute, then we want you. You don't have to be a firefighter. You could be communications officer, logistics, community education, administration. You know, we are literally saying to anybody that's out there, there. We've got a job for you if you want to give us some time. And we've got a dynamic, flexible membership model to support that as well. I think you're also asking me what else can people do. At the moment, we're going through our next gen bushfire risk management planning process, which, without going into too much detail, is about what we're going to do for the next 5 years in terms of reducing risk across the Southern Highlands in terms of bush and grass fires. And we are really interested in hearing from anybody in the community that has an opinion on that. We want to know what matters to people, what they think we should be protecting, where we should be undertaking hazard reduction, where we need to establish an APZ or asset protection zone. And this is the first time we've really done this as an agency. So I think it's quite exciting that we're actually kicking the door open to public comment and feedback on this and seeking the opinions of the community, because nobody knows a community better than the people that live there, right? So we want to hear from them. So please reach out to the Mittagong Fire Control Centre or your local brigade and give us that feedback. Once that plan has gone through its process and is in draft form and there is a plan, that'll obviously go out for community consultation formally. But before we get to that stage, like I said, I want to know, if you live in Exeter, Bundanoon, Robertson, what do you care about? What should we be doing for your community? I can't promise that we'll do everything, but we'd like to understand that so we can take that into consideration with our planning process.
And Daniel, the best way for community members to make contact?
Yeah, it's through our fire control centre in Mittagong. Pop in and see us or give us a call. Jump on our social media pages. Flick us an email. Whatever you can do, pop into your local brigade if it's open. But any mechanism where you can get in contact with us, we're very happy for that to occur. And, you know, there's all our contact details are on our website.
And Lisa, council has engaged with community members impacted by the Black Summer fires to inform policy and planning moving forward. Off the back of that, you have now the Wingicarabi Local Recovery Plan that takes a place-based approach and is linked in with neighbouring shires. So we're all not alone. Could you sort of unpack that for us?
So with emergencies or events, it's looking at preparedness, prevention, the response, what happens during the event, and then the recovery. And recovery happens often when the response is still happening, and recovery is really important. So we've established a local recovery plan that, as you mentioned, does take a place-based approach. So it looks at the unique characteristics of a place, looks at the groups, the resource and the supports that are in a place, key partners in terms of reconstruction, New South Wales, communities and justice, welfare services. Red Cross is a key part in the recovery. And through that process, it's looking at the welfare and mental health services to support people in that phase.
Obviously, a clear model of roles and responsibilities to ensure an efficient response. And council has also facilitated a pilot cultural burn in the Gibbon Gunya Reserve in partnership with the Gundagara traditional owners of our First Nations community members.
Yes, we're very excited about Absolutely. So for us, that's the first time in recent memory that Wingicarabi Council has facilitated a cultural burn, and we were very fortunate to have the support of the RFS and appreciate Daniel's support and contribution in terms of resources for the day, which was fantastic. And we were fortunate also to have a number of our First Nations community members. We had Yarrabin Cultural Connections, who are a fire practitioner, Den Barber, facilitate and lead that process locally, and we're hoping that that is the first of a number of cultural burns into the future. So really happy with how the day went, really positive feedback, and our community have a strong environmental focus, a strong desire to recognise and partner with First Nations community members. So it was a fantastic initiative.
Serve as a case study for further cultural burns to occur in council-owned and managed bushland reserves.
That's correct, yes.
And Daniel, the RSF, they are the lead agency in bushfire emergency. So if we could discuss the next generation fire plan.
Yeah, absolutely we are. And just before we go on to that, I would like to just also congratulate the council on that cultural burn that was undertaken. It was a fantastic project and we were obviously more than willing to support it. We'll continue to support those initiatives into the future. We hope that this is only but the first.
Collaboration's what it's all about.
Absolutely, yeah. Right. And knocking down those barriers and getting rid of roadblocks and just actually figuring out how we can get something achieved.
So I'm
delighted that it was such a success. Our members learnt so much from the cultural practitioners, so we'll continue to support that as much as we can. So I just wanted to put that on the record as well. But in terms of the Next Gen Bushfire Risk Management Plan, like I said earlier, it's called the Next Gen because we've learnt some lessons out of Black Summer, as we should, and there's some things that we can do better in terms of our risk management planning. For the first time, we're actually going to use some risk-based modelling that the University of Melbourne do for us, using some fire predictive software and modelling. And what that does is it shows us levels of risk around the Southern Highlands where we may not have considered it previously. So it gives us a risk rating for the entire Southern Highlands. And we put that before our Bushfire Management Committee, which makes up all landholders and land managers, and anyone's got an interest in bushfire, as well as our senior volunteers, to make sure that it is accurate, but also to get their mind thinking about where that risk ratings are. Then undertake a process of identifying treatments, which are hazard reduction burning, asset protection zones, community engagement, and a few other different mechanisms that we have. And we put those across the landscape where we see the risk as being high. And then we send that modelling or that data back to the University of Melbourne and actually get them to model whether our proposed treatments actually make a difference to the risk rating. So it's the first time we've used a science-based approach in this process. Previously, it's been a whole lot of well-meaning people based on their local knowledge, which we're still absolutely keeping as part of the process, but we want to couple that with some actual data and science behind that. So, and then when that comes back, we'll see whether our treatments stack up or not. And if they don't, we'll do some more work. And if they do, that becomes our bushfire risk management plan for the next 5 years. So we'll actually have some data that we can actually rely on. And also, I think the exciting part is, some people in my organisation might be nervous about it, but I'm excited that we're going to be publishing this to the community and we're going to be reporting on it regularly and holding ourselves to account as a bushfire management committee. So if we said we were going to do a hazard reduction burn in a particular area and we've scheduled it for a particular year or particular season, we're going to tell people that and we're going to show them when we do it or not, so that everyone understands really openly and honestly what our plan is and how we're going with that, so that we are, again, it's all about accountability. We want people to have faith in our process.
Yes, well, it's interesting. It's very hard to have accountability without responsibility.
That's right.
That's quite refreshing. Now, Daniel, we're all aware of the fire danger rating system. We all see the signs on the side of the road. Now that's all changed. You have a new fire danger rating system. I'm excited about this because every time I drive past, I think I could just jump out of the car and just change the arrow. Not that I would.
Well, you can't. It's got padlocks on it.
Oh, has it?
You'd have to take a pair of bolt cutters and destroy our sign if you wanted to do that, which I don't encourage you to do.
Thank you.
It's not just us that has a new fire danger rating system. It's actually the entire country. So again, for the first time, as a Commonwealth, we've decided we can all have the same fire danger ratings across, or the same system, I should say, across the whole entire country. So for border communities, that's really important. For travellers, that's really important as well. So we've also, you know, New South Wales RFS led this project nationally and did a whole lot of social research into the old system had 6 categories. And the human brain doesn't really like more than 5 things at once to deal with. So why would we have 6? And there's also a meme getting around I remember seeing that said, only in Australia could the second lowest category be high. And also the colouring system that went with it. So it didn't really make sense either. So a whole lot of research was done, trials were done, and we've come to the conclusion of the new system with 4. And we think it makes good sense. And we also think that people can understand a bit of like a traffic light system. Green is not so bad. Going through yellow, orange, and red is the worst. And having 4 with calls to action, we hope we'll see a better response out of that, because what we actually started to see with this old system was people were just disengaging with it. It was too hard to understand, so people were doing nothing with it. But now we've got a very simple system with moderate, high, extreme, and catastrophic. I point out there that high is still the second lowest category, but there's only 4 of them now. But what other descriptors would you put with it? And the social research suggested that was the best way to go. What we need people to do is be understanding it and know on days of particularly high and above, what does that actually mean? So we're talking about at high, be ready to act. On these types of days, there is a heightened level of risk. If you decide to stay, you need to really follow our information we're providing, and only people that are prepared to stay should stay in place. And if a fire does start, it could move quite quickly. As we go into extreme, we're talking about you need to actually take action now. So this is before a fire starts, because fire danger ratings are issued regardless of whether there's fires in the landscape or not. It's on the forecasted conditions for the next day. So you need to take action now at extreme to protect your life and your property. Fires will spread very quickly and they'll be very dangerous. And the likelihood of us being able to control fires under those circumstances is very low. So we're being very open about that. It'll just be far too intense for us, and we'll be doing things like property protection and trying to save lives. And then obviously catastrophic is as bad as it gets. And our message there is simply, for your survival, leave bushfire-prone areas. And I don't think you can be any clearer about that. If we have a catastrophic day and you live in a bushfire prone area, don't be there. Houses aren't designed to withstand fires under those conditions, no. And people certainly aren't. And we don't want people putting themselves in those sort of situations, really. So that's the new fire danger rating system. All the signs have been changed over. We're starting to issue them now. You'll see the signs changing, and they're always available on the RFS website, available through the new Hazards Near Me app. And as days get into extreme and catastrophic, we'll be sending push notifications to people as well to notify them that, you know, tomorrow's fire danger rating is extreme, for example, for the Wingicarrabee. It's a big new system, and hopefully it doesn't take too much for people to understand it. But taking notice of it and taking it seriously is the key out of it all.
Now, outside of the new fire danger rating system, how can people access the information they need for their particular area or particular shire?
Yeah, so there's lots of information available. We have, firstly, our public website, rfs.nsw.gov.au, where there is so much information, it would take you a long time to go through it all. But it's a very good, dynamic website with a whole lot of information. One of the things I would call out is the home property assessment tool that we have, which is an interactive tool on our website. We can go through and answer a series of questions, and at the end of it, you get a series of recommendations based on your circumstance and your answers. So I would recommend people have a go at that. You can see if you live on bushfire prone land. You can see if the 1050 rule applies to you. There's a whole range of information on there. You can also get information from our social media pages, the RFS, the Southern Highlands, your local brigade. We've all got social media these days. Listen to local radio. Our heroes in local radio and the local media, they will obviously be promoting information for us. And there's also our bushfire information line, which is 1-800-679-737 or 1-800-NSW-RFS, and you can talk to someone. So if there's a fire nearby and you want advice, or you're not sure about a particular situation, then you can always ring our bushfire information line, which operates 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
And it's real time. I noticed through the Black Summer bushfires, where we were broadcasting live here at Highland FM, everything is not only on point, but it's well and truly up to date. So I do need to ask, you did mention radio. I mean, what communication method should we use to stay informed during a bushfire, such as emergency alerts and community notifications?
Yeah, so it's all those mechanisms, really. Our website has all of the information that is in Hazards Near Me, just in a website form. But I would suggest people shouldn't wait for an emergency alert to be issued. There's no guarantee one can be issued in time. And if we're at that stage, things are pretty bad. So we need people to be using Hazards Near Me or the RFS website, or just keeping an eye out around the place as well. But, you know, local radio, local media, they'll also be provided information and the warnings and alerts that everyone else gets. So whilst ABC is our dedicated emergency broadcaster, we obviously have a whole lot of other media outlets that support us during those times as well. So we'll be working with all of those outlets as best we can. But the bushfire information line, the public website, and Hazards Near Me are the go-to points for us.
Now, in the advent of a potential bushfire, how would that impact closures of public facilities?
So as mentioned before, Adam, we have protocols for closure of public spaces, whether that be parks, sports grounds or events. Council's website is dynamic and we constantly update the website, and also we have an e-news as well. So all the information around the protocols for those public spaces, we have links to the RFS, to SES, and information about how to prepare for various emergencies on our website. So I'd encourage people to keep an eye on Council's website as well for that broader information. Sign up to the e-news if they haven't already. Very easy to do. And it comes out every Friday, so it's a great way to stay up to date with events, consultations, information. But the key, as Daniel mentioned, is really communication. You know, just stay aware, stay vigilant, be prepared. Think about and have the conversation before an emergency, before you really need to act, so you've got time to really have a plan for you and your loved ones, your friends, your family, and just be very clear about what you're doing and when, and stay vigilant.
Daniel, the RFS recommends preparedness. I mean, how does that take shape? I mean, what can community members and property owners do to minimise risk on their land and in their properties?
Yeah, absolutely. So I've already spoken about the bushfire survival plan and people needing to have one of those, but we also need people to be thinking about is, if you own a parcel of land, you also own the fuel and you own the risk as well. And this is a shared partnership. It's not all about the RFS doing everything to reduce every piece of risk there is. We need community and people that are owning and managing land to be doing that as well on their own parcels of land. So Get Ready Weekend is a really good point to start that. Making sure that your house block or around your house is well mown. Keep it watered if you can, because good green grass is a good deterrent from grass fires. But, you know, those simple things that I mentioned, making sure your gutters are clean, making sure all the overhanging branches over your house have been cut down and removed. making sure you've got the hose that reaches all the way around the house. And for those residents out in the community that might be a bit older and not be able to do this for themselves, we also have a free program called our ADA program. We can send people out free of charge, a one-off service, to help you prepare your home. So you can get in contact with us through the Bushfire Information Line for that, or our RFS website, and we'll look to support people where we can through that. There's lots people can do, and on our website there's more advice, as I said, but it really starts with Get Ready Weekend, and people really starting to get that back in the front of their mind and taking what we are saying as a hot and dry summer seriously. But also I want to preface that by saying we're not trying to be alarmists. We're not suggesting another black summer type event is coming. What we're suggesting is that we are going to see a heightened, an increased level of fire activity over the next summer, and we need people to be prepared for that.
I guess it's all about conducting regular fire drills, having the conversation at home or at work, having prepared a go bag for a lot of people, which is interesting, and there again without being alarmists, but it's these little things that we do need to consider coming into what is tipped to be one of the hottest summers on record.
Yeah, absolutely. Having that emergency kit ready to go with all your key documents, your medication, all those types of things, that's part of your bushfire survival plan. And a shout out to our colleagues at the Red Cross, they have their emergency ready plan as well for all natural disasters. So between the two, you can be prepared all year round. But I think, you know, pointing out that, you know, fires or floods or any sort of natural disaster is a stressful time. And that's not the time to be doing your preparation, because, you know, you won't be thinking as well as you could be in a more relaxed environment. And it's far better to do this planning now before anything does occur, rather than at the last moment when we might be sending you a watch and act or an emergency warning. It's all too late then. So we need people to be doing that now. And again, Get Ready Weekend's coming this weekend.
Have the conversation.
Absolutely.
So, Daniel, before I let you go, I know Mount Gibraltar is a concern for a lot of residents with backburns coming into what is tipped to be a very hot summer. Can you elaborate on that for us?
Yeah, absolutely. It was only a matter of weeks ago that Fire and Rescue and the Rural Fire Service undertook a hazard reduction burn on Mount Gibraltar, which was very successful, and we're very happy with the outcome of that. And we are undertaking some interface inspections as well around the asset protection zones that are behind some properties there. But if anybody does have concerns about any hazard across the Southern Highlands or potential hazard, they could be contacting us, and we are the legislated authority to investigate that. Doesn't matter whose land it is, whether it's a public authority or a private landowner. If anybody's got concerns about a parcel of land next door to them, then get in contact with us through our website, Hazard Complaints, or contact the Mittagong Fire Control Centre, and we will send somebody out and investigate that, determine if it's a hazard or not, and then the person or people that are responsible for that land will be compelled to undertake some sort of hazard reduction to reduce that risk.
Daniel Osborne, District Manager, Southern Highlands Team, New South Wales RFS, and Lisa Miss Gamble, General Manager, Windjarrabie Shire Council. Thank you so much for joining us. The crucial topic of bushfire preparedness. A big thank you again.
Thanks, Adam.
Thank you, Adam.
The Check-In with Council podcast can be listened to anytime on the Highland FM website, highlandfm.org.au. And there is a link to catch up on Shire's e-news for news and updates.